Memory is a powerful thing. It gives our lives depth and binds our relationships together. But when memory is lost, as it is for Alzheimer's patients or those suffering from dementia, it can turn us or those we love into unrecognizable people. Former journalist J. Newton Small learned this firsthand while caring for her father, and she used her journalistic training to counteract the often dehumanizing experience of memory loss. She joins us now in studio. J. Newton Small is the co-founder of Memory Well. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me on, Kojo.
Your father was diagnosed with early onset Alzheimer's when you were still in college. When you became his primary caretaker, how did you try to take care of him? And when did you become his primary caretaker?
So my father, as you said, was diagnosed when he was 58 years old, and I was still a junior in college. 10 years later, my mother passed away, which was 6 years ago now, and I became his primary caregiver. I was an only child, and she actually passed away quite unexpectedly of a brain aneurysm. I tried moving him up here to Washington, D.C., but I rapidly realized I couldn't take care of him. He would wander away looking for my mother, and 5 panicked hours later of police and fire searching for him, they would find him sort of a few miles away. He would try to cook, and he was used to an electric stove, and I'd come home to a house full of gas. So I ended up putting him into an assisted living facility, which had a memory unit. And when I did, they asked me to fill out this 20-page questionnaire about his life. And I remember sitting in this room, writing down answers to these questions, thinking, A, no one's going to be able to read my handwriting. I have terrible handwriting. And then B, no one's going to read these things at all. They're just going to sit and gather dust, because who reads 20-page questionnaires in handwritten form anymore? So I handed in the form and I said, look, why don't I just write down his story for you? I'm a journalist. It's what I do. I just left Time magazine after 10 years there. And they kind of gave me a funny look, and they were like, are you sure? And I was like, yeah, no, really, I promise I can do this. And I wrote it down for him, his story down for them. And they loved it. It really transformed his care.
This is weird. After my late wife died of a brain aneurysm, my mother came to live with me, and then she developed Alzheimer's. So there are some similarities in the stories here. When it comes to aging, we tend to read someone's full story at the end of their life. When you checked your father into Copper Ridge, I think it's called, an assisted living facility in Maryland, you gave his caretakers his story at the beginning of his time there. Why did you do that?
Well, I felt it was really important for them to understand who he was. He couldn't really speak anymore. Everything kind of came out as a word salad. And I wanted them to know that he'd been this amazing man. He'd been a diplomat with the United Nations for 40 years. He'd lived all over the world. He'd had all these incredible adventures.
One with Winston Churchill.
That's how he got his job. Yeah, he was this, you know, college dropout from Australia, went to London, was bartending in Earl's Court, and he took a job working for the British government driving on off days and weekends, and occasionally he'd drive Winston Churchill, who asked him, what are you doing with your life, Small? And my dad said, well, I'm having fun. Churchill said, go get a degree and I'll write a recommendation for you. And my dad did, when it wasn't really a college degree, it was like a 1-year certificate from the University College of London,
enabling him to do what he really wanted to do, which was travel the world.
Yeah, Churchill wrote him the recommendation and he joined this new thing called the United Nations.
Wow. And you told all of that in the story that you wrote to Copper Ridge.
I did. And here's how it transformed his care. So 2 of his caregivers were actually from Ethiopia. And his first assignment with the United Nations was 8 years in Addis Ababa. And they were blown away that this man had spent 8 years working with their emperor, Haile Selassie. They would sit for hours and show him photos of Selassie and of Lalibela and Gondor and Addis. And he loved it because he remembered his early 20s, but he didn't remember the last sort of 30 years. And to him, it was like being back in Africa again.
800-433-8850 is the number to call if you have comments or questions. Are you or is someone you know living with Alzheimer's or dementia? How have you processed the diagnosis or approached the caregiving process? You can share your story with us at 800-433-8850 or by sending email to kojo@wamu.org. You can shoot us a tweet at Kojo Show or go to our website, kojoshow.org, and join the conversation there. Joining us now by phone is Robin Stone. Robin Stone is the executive director of Leading Age. Robin Stone, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much, Kojo.
Robin, in terms of sheer numbers and cost, how would you say Alzheimer's and other memory loss disorders affects Americans?
Well, it affects quite a few Americans, particularly older Americans. Approximately 5 million older persons have some type of Alzheimer's or related dementias. And what is so astounding about this disease is how expensive it is. In 2016, the direct costs for this disease in the United States was about $236 billion. And in the last 5 years of life, a person with Alzheimer's or related dementia is likely to spend about $287,000 compared with $175,000 for those with heart disease. So we think that heart disease is a big killer and also really expensive, but actually dementia tops that.
Robin, what's the difference between Alzheimer's in particular and dementia generally? Does the care for each condition differ?
Actually, they do not differ, because in each case, Alzheimer's is a particular type of dementia, but there are many other types of dementia as well. The outcomes are basically the same: significant cognitive impairment, memory loss. But what I like to tell people is that the most important thing about dementias are the loss of executive function. So it's not just the memory. In fact, I often argue that memory care is really not the right word for many of these centers that are opening up. It's really the executive function that starts to impair people over time.
800-433-8850. How have you documented the lives of loved ones? Are there new tools and strategies we can learn from? You can send us a tweet at Kojo Show or email to kojo@wamu.org. We asked Twitter followers how they've taken care of their loved ones with memory loss. Here are some responses. Andrew says, by making memories with grandma for my kids. Georgia says, by watching the same shows over and over with my mom, mysteries mostly, and pretend I'm seeing them for the first time. That's what I used to do. My mom used to read the same articles in Jet magazine every day, and when I'd come home in the evening, we'd go over the same articles every day, and she enjoyed it tremendously. And peace-loving patriot says, I documented my mother's dementia in photos by saving a birthday message she left me. You can also send us a tweet at Kojo Show or call us 800-433-8850. Robin, Jay became her father's sole caretaker when she was in her 30s. How often do young people end up taking on that role for their parents, and what kinds of challenges do they encounter?
You know, that's not your typical situation, because typically you don't have early onset, although we are seeing that growing amongst our population. So typically you're going to have a little bit of an older caregiver. I think Jay's example is becoming more common, and what's incredible about what Jay has done is to really bring her journalistic skill sets to this reminiscence therapy, which has been around for quite a while. The unique aspect of what Jay has been doing is that she brings a very professional ability to actually capture these stories and to capture them over a long period of time and to then share them with the caregivers who are taking care, in this case, taking care of her father, but share them with folks either in assisted living or in nursing home settings.
Jay, I know your father passed, I think, in 2015.
Yeah.
But what changes did you see in his care once his caretakers became familiar with him as a person and not just as a patient? Stories like the Ethiopian individuals who had to take care of him.
Well, and also, I mean, so my father, one of the reasons why I had to put him into a home is that he was getting increasingly agitated and violent. And that happens with about 20% of those living with Alzheimer's.
Yep.
And dementia. Yep, really belligerent. And he... And they were trying very desperately to figure out why, with a trigger of what made him so upset and what would really kind of agitate him. And he worked with a very famous behavioralist named Tipa Snow at Copper Ridge, and she used his story to really figure out why he was like this or what had happened. And it was very successful. She said she would never have been able to figure out what the triggers were if she didn't have his story. And she wished that everybody would have these stories with them that she worked with, because so often you get these people with Alzheimer's and dementia. For example, one of the homes we work with talked about how there was a man who would get very upset at mealtimes because they'd ring this bell at mealtimes and he'd get really, really agitated. And they couldn't figure out forever why he was getting so agitated. Then they realized when they heard his story, he was a fireman and he heard the bell and he would be trying to evacuate people. And so they just stopped ringing the bell and everything was fine.
Sharing your father's story became the basis for your nonprofit, Memory Well. When did you realize that what you did for your father was something that might be needed, that might work for other people?
So it's actually a for-profit, but it's a socially sound investment enterprise. So we have a mission at the heart of it, and we're looking to really to change things. We're not looking to sort of make $1 million right off the bat. We're looking to really just change the world, change with Alzheimer's world in particular. Given the response to my dad's story, it was clear that there was a need. And we started writing other stories for other folks with Alzheimer's dementia. And as we did, providers realized that this was really making a difference in their care. And so we're now piloting with or talking to or in talks to pilot or piloting with 7 either homes or chains. And then we've also had families approach us individually, just listening, you know, hearing about Memory Well, hearing about my dad's story and saying, hey, can you tell my mom's story? She might not be in a home, but there are home health caregivers coming in and we'd like to have her story around for them to see. And so one of the things I really love about it is when homes actually print out the story. So each story is printable. It's a 1-page story and they hang them up in the home so that other people coming in can see who else is living there. And, you know, my dad had this best friend named Warren. I'd visit him all the time. I'd be like, hey, Warren. Warren would always be there, but I knew nothing about Warren. His caregivers couldn't tell me anything about him. If I'd known more about Warren, I would have engaged with him. And maybe if Warren's family had known more about my dad, they would have engaged with him. So just building community in some of these homes to me is just an awesome thing to see, just the difference it makes. And people start to bond and people start to know each other and see each other even outside sometimes of the homes. And so it's, you know, it gets rid of that isolation, I think.
Here now is Andrew in Washington. Andrew, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hi. Thank you, Kojo, and thanks to both you and Robin for doing this show today. My mom was diagnosed with early onset Alzheimer's about 5 years ago. A few months ago, she fell and broke her hip. She ended up in assisted living out in Front Royal, where I'm from, and she will stay there. And first of all, I appreciate the recommendations that I've heard from Robin on dealing with assisted living. It's a whole challenge and a whole world of its own. So families are often coping with that as well as this disease in their loved one. But something that I've learned and something that has helped my family to cope is by bringing my 2 young kids, I have a 5-year-old and a 3-year-old, and bringing them in to the situation and telling them stories about who Grandma was and who she is now, things she's done. It's really helped us it's building these memories for them of their grandmother and stories that they'll be able to tell their friends and kids one day. Thanks again.
Thank you very much for sharing that with us. I had kind of the opposite experience. My mother's short-term memory was gone, but her long-term memory was fine. And so she would tell my kids stories about me growing up that did not make me out to be the perfect person I was trying to tell them that I was. So they began to know things about me. But Jay, you're a former journalist. You wrote for almost a decade at Time magazine. Did that make you feel specially equipped to take on this role now at Memory Well?
It does. I mean, so we felt it was really important that it's journalists that tell the stories, and we have more than 200 journalists nationwide who we're working with. There's all these do-it-yourself, fill-out-your-own-questionnaire kind of things in all these homes, but it's really hard. I mean, people, like, when you have to sit down and definitively define a person's life on paper, as a loved one, there's a lot of conflicts there. It's very fraught. It's very difficult. On average, it takes them months to return these questionnaires to the homes, and that's not great because these homes need that information really right at the onset during the transition, which is one of the hardest times when you're first putting somebody into a home, and it causes family strife and family angst. You know, what's an appropriate story to tell about grandma? And so We feel like journalists take all this sort of angst out of it. We, you know, the interview process becomes almost cathartic for families, where they talk about what they loved about that person and what made that person special to them. And it takes the pressure off of them to define that person, really. And then once we get the stories done, we send them back to the families to make sure that the families are okay with them, and which is not a very journalistic thing to do. We never would do that at time. But in this case, this is a person's life, and we want to make sure that it's accurately represented and it's represented in a way that they're okay with. But we've also found it's important for caregivers and providers to know certain things that are tough sometimes for families to talk about. You know, what are sensitive subjects that trigger aggression? What are ways to ease that aggression? What are subjects you should avoid because it's going to upset them? And so we really feel that the journalists in this case can take a lot of the pressure off of both the caregivers and the families and create a product very quickly that they, you know, that can really help ease understanding and ease transitions.
And as for Andrew, who just called, you can see a photo of Andrew's mom that we retweeted on our Twitter account at Kojo Show. Here's Ryan in Salisbury, Maryland. Ryan, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Kojo. Thanks for taking my call. I don't have any personal experience so much with family members, but my wife and mother, they both are caregivers, and the ladies they both take care of, she has dementia. And I was just curious, whenever I bring my newborn son over, like Miss Ruth, that's the lady, she just like glows, and she'll be having a horrible day, and like she barely ever remembers anything. But she can always remember my son's name, and she'll, when Ashley comes to work, she's like, oh, how's Maxwell? And it's really cool because, you know, I guess she's, like, pretty set in with Alzheimer's, so she barely remembers anything.
But she remembers Maxwell.
Yeah, and I wasn't sure if there's any research.
Let me ask Robin Stone about that. Robin Stone?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is just an example of the human nature of people and the fact that we have to recognize that even when people have dementia, there's real personhood there. And I think, obviously, Maxwell is connecting somewhere deep with her in terms of that relationship. What's been so fabulous about these, what we call non-pharmacologic interventions, not using drugs, but really recognizing that we can actually moderate a lot of behaviors by really recognizing the inner soul of folks. In the case of Jay, you know, using reminiscences and using, from an intergenerational perspective, using young journalists to capture these stories. These are very, very important.
We only have about 10 seconds left.
It brings a lot of hope to people.
Robin Stone is the executive director of Leading Age. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Jay Newton Small is the co-founder of Memory Well. Jay, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Koja.
That's it for the show today, but we've got lots of ways for you to continue interacting with the show online. Tomorrow, we'll be talking with a local author named Elizabeth White, who wrote a book called 55 Unemployed and Faking Normal. It's about the struggles she went through as a mid-career worker who unexpectedly found herself unemployed a decade ago. If you're a mid to late career worker who's had a similar experience, we'd love to hear from you. We've created a Google form where you can share your story at kojoshow.org. You don't have to share your name or your location if you don't want to, just your story about what it's like to experience unexpected unemployment or what it's like to suddenly find yourself unemployable at an advanced phase of your career. You can hear our segment with Elizabeth White when we're back on the air tomorrow at noon. We'll also be sharing selections from an interview I did last week at the Library of Congress with Congressman John Lewis and his collaborator on the graphic novel series called March. That's all tomorrow. Until then, thank you all for listening. I'm Kojo Nambi.
The Kojo Nambi Show is produced by Michael Martinez, Ingelisa Schrobsdorf, Ruth Tam, Elizabeth Weinstein, Avery Kleiman, and Taria Rogers. The engineer is Meg Bunting. Cliff Gallagher has been on the phones. Podcasts of all shows and audio archives are available at our website, kojoshow.org.
WAMU 88.5 is your listener-supported NPR news station in the greater Washington, D.C. region. You can support the Kojo Namdi Show and all the regional coverage you value by becoming a member today. Click the donate button at WAMU.org, and thanks.